RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the January 16th episode of the MMA Report Podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, and come up here on this week's edition of the show, we are going to get you ready for the first UFC event of 2019. Also, the first UFC event on ESPN. It is UFC Brooklyn. We'll break down this fight card, give our thoughts throughout this fight card, talk about various angles of this fight card. Plus, we are going to talk about Mike Mazzulli of the Mohegan Tribe, Department of Athletic Regulations, turning down a proposed fight for the Bellator events next month at the Mohegan Sun. Also, we'll talk about Kat Zingano appealing her UFC 232 loss. And we're going to give our breakout star for 2019. Plus, I'm going to be joined by Mario Bautista, of course, stepping up on short notice to make his UFC debut on Saturday against Corey Sandhagen, replacing John Lineker. Also, going to talk to Two Fighters, going to be a part of Valor Fighting Challenge 54 on Saturday in Knoxville. Christina Ricker and Taylor Turner. Of course, I will be in Knoxville this weekend for that Valor card. So if you're in the Knoxville area, come by and say hi. I'll be hanging out watching some local fights. So looking forward to that. So Daniel, man, how you doing on this Wednesday morning?
Jason, I'm doing quite good. I'm ready to get the year started with some mixed martial arts action. It kind of felt like we had a slow start to the year, Jason, but man, we're kicking things off with UFC's big transition to ESPN. Are you excited to be an ESPN Plus subscriber, Jason?
I am, just because I think we're going to see a lot of sports content on ESPN Plus, especially as a core cutter. I do have YouTube TV, which gives me all the ESPNs. But, you know, I mean, we were talking before we started recording. I think one of the things about ESPN Plus, for us as sports fans, all those 30 for 30s that are on there that you're interested to see. You know, one of the things that I'm kind of interested to see how this is going to play out on Saturday. Now, for the most part, since I'll be at the Valor show on Saturday night, I'll probably only maybe see the main event and co-main event live. But I'm interested to see kind of how the flow of this event goes in comparison to how the flows of event went on FS1 with, you know, the main card being on a streaming platform. Are we just going to be kind of, if it was like a fight pass card, fight, or is it going to be kind of what we saw on FS1, or is it a little in between? I mean, I think that if it ends up being what we saw on FS1, I think there's going to be a lot of people complaining that, hey, I'm paying for a streaming service and I'm getting a bunch of filler content. So that's one of the things that does interest me.
If on a subscription service, the pacing of the broadcast is identical to the pacing of FS1, which is what we had a fight and then we had like 27 minutes at the table and then we had another fight. If the pacing is the same, you've got to alert the authorities, because I'm going to run outside of my house and straight into traffic. I cannot take it anymore. I mean, I get it. If you're on ESPN and you have a slow paced show, you have your commercials, you have your stupid features, you go to the table and get your stupid opinions. But hey, look, I love opinions. I love sports talk. But when you're watching a fight card, you're not watching Pardon the Interruption. You're watching fights. You know, it's not the place for it. I mean, it is a place for it in terms of like, you can add some information, give it to the viewer, but we got so much of it in between the fights at FS1, it really hurt the broadcast. So on a subscription service, if we get pacing like that, Jason, that is absolutely unacceptable. But absolutely. I mean, that is a big question. In addition to just the fights playing out, and we have a lot of important fights at the top of this card, this is also a real tone setter for how the UFC broadcast is going to look on ESPN. Usually things, you know, the UFC does have a brand. They have an identity, how they go about doing their broadcast. But when you have a big change like this, Jason, there will be little tweaks and stuff that I think we will see. And it's hard to predict. But do we know, by the way, who the broadcast team is for this card, Jason?
I haven't seen. I believe John Anik's going to be on the play-by-play. I haven't seen exactly who's going to be calling the fights on Saturday. But it's, you know, I mean, look, if when you're buying a streaming platform, you know, you don't necessarily want to be sitting there and you know, watching commercials. So that'd be interesting. I mean, you know, so it's, I think in terms of the presentation, we're going to see kind of the same UFC. But, you know, as we have built up this fight card, I kind of feel like, you know, people really, I mean, obviously there's been some changes to this event. You know, Kyle Stewart stepping up on short notice, take on Chance Roundtree, which will be the opening fight on the preliminary card on ESPN+. I mentioned about Mario Bautista replacing John Lineker to take on Corey Sandhagen. Also, Carl Roberson stepping up on short notice to take on Glover Teixeira. But overall, it's a nice little fight card that's going to take place on Saturday night, whether you're going to watch it after the fact or whether you're going to watch it live. You know, when I look at the prelims, there's two fights to me that really stick out to me. First off, Belal Muhammad versus Jeff Neal. I'm going to call it right now. Someone's getting knocked out in that fight. I don't know who's going to get the knockout. Someone's getting knocked out in the fight. And the other prelim that sticks out to you immediately is that feature prelim of Alexander Hernandez versus Donald Cerrone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Donald Cerrone versus Alexander Hernandez, all intents and purposes, to me, is the second most interesting fight on this entire card. That's the fight I'm looking forward to behind the main event. And there's a reason why it's the featured prelim and the main event prelim or whatever. It is absolutely a dynamite fight, a dynamite personality in Donald Cerrone, a rising star in Alexander Hernandez. I mean, we're talking about breakout stars later in the show. Alexander Hernandez could absolutely fit in that conversation, and he's got a hell of a platform with Donald Cerrone. So, Jason, absolutely, you nailed it. I mean, when you start looking at this prelim, you almost make the case that the Muhammad Neal fight should be on ESPN, obviously with the benefit of hindsight. You may want to replace it with the Sandhagen-Bautista fight, just because Bautista, who you got later on the show, was a late replacement. And that's going to be a tough fight for him, you know, on short notice against Corey Sandhagen. You know, the other fight that really sticks out to me is just getting a chance to watch the Calderwood-Lipsky fight, just because I think Joanne Calderwood is a fighter who I think the start to her UFC run has been disappointing relative to what I think her true talent level is. She really impressed me prior to being on The Ultimate Fighter. As a fighter, I imagined would be a fixture at flyweight, a fighter who's just a phenomenal striker, really talented. And it does seem like as she's returned, she's starting to look better. So that's why this fight's important. I think the light heavyweight fight between Manningfield and Moreira will be exciting. I mean, at the end of the day, they put these fights on ESPN to be exciting. Mm-hmm. So I would look for those to be great. And then the ESPN Plus main card, Jason, I mean, it's just littered with interesting fights, whether it be high-quality fights like the main event, high-quality fighters like Greg Gillespie, or controversy like Greg Hardy. It's got a little bit of everything for everyone.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we'll get into Greg Hardy in a little bit, one of the things, and I text you on Tuesday night about this, you know, when you look at this main event between Cejudo and Dillashaw, and you talked about last week, it's your number one fight here in January, February, I think for me it was number seven, is that I feel like the whole talk of this fight is all about what happens on Friday at the weigh-ins. Will TJ Dillashaw, you know, make weight? I think, but let's not also forget, it's not like Henry Cejudo doesn't have to drop a massive amount of weight to make 125 pounds as well.
Dude, yeah, I went to a legacy event. I drove from my house in Harlingen all the way to Houston, Texas. That's like a 5-hour drive to watch Henry Cejudo fight in Houston, in legacy. And that fight did not happen because he couldn't make weight. And I think he had the quote-unquote flu or something. He got sick, but I think that just means he couldn't make weight. I mean, this guy's had a it's hard to cut down to 125, Jason. You know, I'm 5'11", and I weigh about 195. I can't imagine getting down to 125. So it's just hard on the human body, and Henry Cejudo does have a history. So the first competition is absolutely going to be between TJ Dillashaw and Henry Cejudo, who can have a cut that doesn't affect their fight performance. The answer is probably neither of them. The answer is both will be – these will be tough cuts. And absolutely, you cannot take for granted that Cejudo is going to make weight just because he is literally the flyweight champion. It's going to be tough weight cuts for both guys. I think it would be a shock, to be honest with you, if we're talking on Friday – and both these guys make 125, to be completely honest with you. There are just so many variables and so many questions with both fighters. Neither of them have a clean track record. Cejudo doesn't have a clean track record of making 125, and TJ Dillashaw is the Bantamweight champion. So between those two circumstances, I really would anticipate the title might not even be on the line in this fight, to be honest with you. I think that's a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things of, and we talk about this all the time, is it's the knowns and unknowns of a fight. And I feel like there's just so many unknowns about what we're going to see on Saturday night. I mean, we know what Henry Cejudo looks like at 125 pounds. I mean, he's coming off a tremendous performance to win the title against Demetrius Johnson. We have no idea what TJ Dillashaw is going to look at 125 pounds. I thought it was interesting. Brett Okamoto had a tweet, I want to say it was on Monday or Tuesday, of kind of this picture of the scientific aspect, this formula of how he's going to make 125 pounds, which you see some of these photos of TJ, and you're like, man, is he going to be able to get down? But, you know, we'll find out on Friday morning whether or not he's going to make weight. And I look at this fight. I mean, look, if this fight was at 135 pounds, there's no question. My pick would be TJ Dillashaw. But, man, at 125 pounds, I my pick's going to be Henry Cejudo.
I mean, at the end of the day, Henry Cejudo is coming up beating, like, the best pound-for-pound fighter in the planet. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're going out on a limb picking an underdog, even though he is a sly underdog. But it's like Henry went out. He showed us his potential against Demetrius Johnson. So it's not unrealistic. And I totally get what you're saying, Jason. And I've gone back and forth. You know, I went to sleep last night thinking I was going to wake up today and pick Henry Cejudo. But the more I think about it, the more I think TJ Dillashaw is going to win this fight. There's plenty of concern cutting down. Specifically, when you cut down, you're scared the power is going to get zapped from TJ Dillashaw in the hands. And even if, you know, what's up?
No, what I was going to say about TJ, though, is we have seen TJ take some shots on that chin. You look at the Cody Garbrandt fights, Cody lands some good shots in those fights, other fights he's had, people land good shots. And I wonder, could that chin be a little less because of the amount of weight he's cutting to make weight for this fight?
Not only that, but it does build up over time. Once you get hit and hit and hit, even if you survive, that doesn't guarantee your chin's going to be like that forever, because it's not. It does get chipped away. So that combination is scary. And with Henry, there have been, I mean, his stand-up has improved so dramatically that he's an above-average striker now. And he also has great explosion. So I could absolutely see him catching Dillashaw and putting him away. That's why there's a lot of concern here between his ability to take a punch and deliver a fight-ending one. Because I do think, you know, this, if this fight plays out on the feet, we're going to see Dillashaw outscore Henry Cejudo. I think he's going to use his length, and he's going to use his movement to beat him up. But the question is, like, Cejudo, if he does lose the stand-up, where's his ability to take the fight down to the ground? Obviously, Dillashaw has a wrestling base and he's a great wrestler. But it's not unrealistic to expect Henry Cejudo to go out there and score takedowns in this fight, especially as the fight prolongs. So that's where I'm kind of worried. I think I could absolutely see Henry stealing rounds, especially if we see – I mean, I don't even know what to expect when it comes to the gas tank of both guys. Mm-hmm. You know, Henry has had some issues – with his cardio, and Dillashaw making a dramatic weight cut, you can't expect the cardio to be anywhere what it was on his normal weight class. So there's a lot of unknowns, a lot of questions, and that's why this fight is so exciting, because this is a huge fight for both guys' careers. I mean, Dillashaw can be a double champion. Henry Cejudo could have one of the most impressive back-to-back runs, back-to-back wins in the history of, like, lower weight MMA. When you look at featherweight, bantamweight, flyweight, it doesn't get more impressive than getting back-to-back wins over Demetrius Johnson and TJ Dillashaw. And that's what Henry Cejudo has the opportunity of doing. But I do think TJ is going to drop down to 125 and leave the cage the champion.
I will say this. I was talking to Mitch Raposo, who is a prospect out of the Northeast MMA scene, who as an amateur has been a 25 or 35 or, and I remember when I talked to him a couple months ago, you know, he was kind of, he really wasn't sure what he was going to do. And I talked to him this week, and he told me how he's bulking up to go to 135. Cause you know, his coaches, his manager, they see what's going on in the MMA scene. And you'll, the interview will be up on the MMAreport.com here later on this week. But one of the things that we talked about is, hey, don't you feel like a lot of 125-pound fighters are going to be rooting for Henry Cejudo? And you have to think that's the truth. Is Joseph Benavidez, Dustin Ortiz, who are fighting on this card, they both have to be rooting for Henry Cejudo to win, because if Henry Cejudo wins, you got a better chance that there is another flyweight title fight. If TJ Dillashaw wins, I mean, look, he said he's being brought in to kill the division.
He is, and it's a really, and it's crazy to think that a division is on the line in a fight. It really is. And I guess a division was on the line when Amanda Nunes fought Cyborg. And even though, you know, Megan Anderson's probably still going to fight a few times, and maybe we'll see Megan Anderson versus Amanda Nunes one day, it's like that division's dead. So it is crazy to have a division on the line here. You would think that it would be a promotion's decision, just be like, this division's done. And UFC's basically made it. But the way I would describe it is like ending a relationship with like a friend by like not texting them back, but not like saying, I don't want to be your friend anymore. I mean, that's kind of what's happened here with the UFC flyweight division. And it's interesting because personally, I understand that the UFC flyweight division isn't a net positive. But I think there's enough talent in that division to keep it alive. And we've seen some guys leave or move up to bantamweight that are so talented, and it's a shame they can't fight their natural weight class. So I get rooting for Henry Cejudo. But even if Cejudo wins, I mean, if this division makes it out of 2019, that would be the miracle of the year, regardless of who wins this fight, Jason.
Dude, I think a 1% chance we're sitting here 12 months from now talking about a UFC flyweight fight.
I think it's probably 2.5%, Jason, but, you know, that's a minor argument.
Here's
a minor argument. I agree with you.
We get to August. Are we previewing a flyweight fight?
No, I don't think we're previewing Benavidez versus whoever. I mean, we both predicted, I think, Benavidez would win the title, but I don't think so. I mean, they have cut the hell out of the flyweight roster. It seems like every fight that's been booked is just – it was booked before they made a decision to kill the division.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't think so. So, I mean, then they were looking at like an immediate death versus a prolonged killing, no matter who wins.
Yeah, I guess if you're a flyweight, you're also probably rooting for Joseph Benavidez to win, because I think a Dustin Ortiz win probably kind of doesn't really help out the division in the long run. But before we get into that, let's talk about the co-main event. Greg Hardy versus Alan Crowder. And one of the things, and obviously there's been so much said about Greg Hardy, we've talked about in the past. The thing that I just, and I was listening to Kamaru Usman this week on Ariel Helwani's show, and the question, and paraphrasing, but the question that Ariel asked was essentially of, you know, hey, a year ago, you didn't have a good relationship with the UFC. What's changed? And Usman's response, and just kind of summing up what he said, he's basically saying, look, it doesn't matter what the color of your skin is. All the UFC cares about is, do you bring in that money? Do you bring in that green? And clearly that is why Greg Hardy is here. But I do find interesting that the UFC is essentially not promoting Greg Hardy for the most part. You look at the open workouts that are today in New York City. Greg Hardy and Alan Crowder are not a part of it. It's Cejudo, Dillashaw, Hernandez, and Cerrone are the four fighters. But I will say this. One of the things that in talking to some people down at American Top Team, people's opinion I value and trust, and one of the things that you basically have said is Greg Hardy's been a model citizen. He's going to go out and win on Saturday night. There is not a doubt in my mind. I think he's going to go out and win by knockout. I just wonder, what's the end game here with the UFC and Greg Hardy? Because they're taking a massive risk here.
Well, they could have just made a mistake. They really could have. And it's not unheard of for the UFC to make a mistake. For the love of God, they booked Greg Hardy on the same card as Rachel Ostovich. It is difficult to champion Greg Hardy when you're also telling a story about someone who overcame domestic violence recently in Rachel Ostovich. So they make poor decisions, dumb decisions, mistakes. I think signing Greg Hardy, getting in the Greg Hardy business was a mistake, even if he is a model citizen. And it's great to hear. At the end of the day, that's a change in his character from when he was with the Dallas Cowboys versus when he's doing MMA. Because like when he went from the Panthers, had the deal where he was he was ostracized from the league because he, like, abused his girlfriend. He was not a great teammate with the Cowboys, so he has improved there, but it still makes me not feel great that he's using a sport like MMA where you punch people in the face as a redemptive arc in his career. You know, it's like I just feel like I don't want him in the UFC. I don't want him in MMA. And it's hard because, like, you want to be a forgiving human being, right, and stuff, but there are just some actions where it's like, that's fine, have a redemptive arc, but do it as, like, not in the entertainment industry. I don't know. I just feel like in the entertainment industry, we're almost holding these people up as, like, idols or whatever, and it's just weird to put this guy back in that spot.
You know, one of the things that, and I was listening to the Co-Main Event podcast with Chad Dundas and Ben Folks, and they brought up this listener email, and I honestly, I had not thought of it this way. What's Will Chope thinking? I mean, this is a guy that obviously was not had the name value that Greg Hardy has, but, you know, he had domestic abuse situations. Story comes out. I want to say it was like a Davis fight when they were maybe doing a card in Singapore, and the UFC immediately cuts him. And, you know, and Dana White in the past has said, you know, oh, this is something you don't come back from. But then we see, you know, Greg Hardy come back. But something else I want to mention is I saw this on Tuesday night. RJ Clifford had this Twitter poll where he said the UFC signing Greg Hardy and his fight on Saturday, one, makes me upset. Two, doesn't bother me. So there's been 140 votes, so a small sample size. What side do you think has 71% of the votes?
I bet it doesn't bother me.
It is. Only 29% makes me upset. There's three people who actually responded to him, and I'll read what they said. The first one, which he says, this is a sport of fighting. Anyone who cares is a hypocrite, basically saying you can't find work if you messed up before. If he gets knocked out, are people really going to get mad? That was from someone named Jason Peters. Another guy, Danny Verdon, says, it doesn't bother me, but I hope he gets laid out, but I hope they give him a legit heavyweight sooner than later. And then Ahmed says, I hope he regrets what he did. And I think that's kind of that last point is I hope he regrets what he did. And I think that's the problem a lot of people have with Greg Hardy. Is he hasn't come out and said that.
And it's not like it's a mistake where he had a fender bender. Like, this was an abusive guy towards his girlfriend. Like there's a major difference. Like, domestic assault is something where maybe you shouldn't come back from it. But it's not like you should, you know, we have a justice system, and if you go to jail, you go to jail. And if not, I mean, whatever. But it's like to just – it just sucks to continue to do this redemptive arc for these people who commit domestic assault. I mean – it's fine if you're going to redeem yourself as a human being. But again, you make a choice when you give him the opportunity to make a career in the entertainment industry, which is what fighting is. It's a sport, but it's also entertainment. And the way you opened it was a great way of framing this part of our show, because, like, the reason why Will Chope isn't in the UFC and Greg Hardy is because surely the UFC expected the possibility of making money in the Greg Hardy business, which may not be an incorrect assumption, because when Greg Hardy fights, we do talk about it. The only contender series anybody ever talked about was the time Greg Hardy fought on there. It's purely simple. I guarantee you the viewership numbers for his contender series fights was way higher than any other contender series.
Yeah.
On Fight Pass.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. It's like the UFC had to have made a choice. Personally, I would not have made a choice to bring him back. I mean, I remember though, Greg Hardy. That was that was one of the defining sports stories of the year when that came out. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of upset that Dallas Cowboys were signing him. And it was just in that moment. It's like I don't want to forget that moment because that was rough, man, what transpired there. And here he is in the co-main event of the UFC's big debut on ESPN+.
Look, I remember when he played for the Dallas Cowboys. Dallas came to Tampa, and you know, you heard how the fans reacted, and it's just I think it says a lot about where the UFC is currently and kind of how they view things. And you know, look, as I said, I think he's going to go out there. I think it's going to be a first round knockout. I don't, but I think the interesting thing will be from a fighting aspect is how does the UFC. How do they match him going forward? I think one of the questions that you're going to have, and we just haven't seen it happen yet, is what happens if you get, let's say, like a Justin Willis. Let's say you get like someone like a Curtis Blaydes who's got strong wrestling. You know, that's kind of the unknown with Greg Hardy is what happens if he gets a takedown. What happens if Alan Crowder goes in there and he scores a takedown, you know, in the opening 30 seconds, and Greg Hardy can't get off his back?
Yeah. I mean, we've seen him. And the thing is, he showed promise on the feet. But off his back, there's a question there. I mean, and I don't think he's finding a guy who's going to put him on his back, though. And if he does, I don't think Alan Crowder is going to be able to keep him there. Greg Hardy's going to struggle against these guys.
And we both know this, Daniel. Alan Crowder will be the biggest fan favorite on Saturday night.
He will absolutely. And it's like if the guy who beats Greg Hardy is going to be a huge fan favorite. I mean, a gif of Greg Hardy getting knocked out, it's going to go all over the internet and will likely be rejoiced.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something troubling about that whole situation. It's like at the end of the day, the check still clears when Greg Hardy's icing down his cheek there. And it just feels like I don't know.
I look at the placement of this fight on the card, and I mean, I'm guessing that the UFC and ESPN's hope is that Greg Hardy, people are gonna fork over $5 to watch him fight. But I do wonder, A, if this fight was on ESPN, what kind of ratings would it draw, and B, how many Greg Hardy pieces are going to come out on Saturday morning about his past?
I'm sure a lot, but it's also a different situation than what we see sometimes. Like when we saw when celebrities get put in high profile spots, like for instance, it's not like, you know, when Kevin Hart got taken out of the Oscars because of homophobic tweets, that was like new information revealed. Whereas with Greg Hardy, it's not like new information will be revealed. Mostly everyone already knows what happened, so I could certainly see that, but I just don't think it'll have much of an impact. But yeah, I could definitely see that. And then like once – I mean it's going to continue to build up over time. As Greg Hardy progresses in his career, I do think there will be more momentum negativity against Greg Hardy fighting in the UFC. So that's kind of the trouble the UFC runs into as they get closer to him touching the sun, maybe providing more value – as he puts together a really impressive win streak, there's going to be way more pushback. As he gets in more high-profile places, there'll be more pushback in featuring him. So that's kind of the catch-22. And along with the more reasons why I wouldn't have gotten the Greg Hardy business, but if we're previewing this fight, I do think he's going to go out there and score a first-round knockout over Alan Crowder. That's kind of what I expect to happen.
And probably happens in 60 seconds or less.
Absolutely, yeah. That's kind of what I think is set up to happen here.
But it'll be interesting to see how that goes down on. Then we got Gregor Gillespie, Yancy Medeiros. So we've talked about this fight, I think, for the last two episodes. Gregor Gillespie, I mean, look, the ceiling is so high for him in terms of where he could go in this UFC lightweight division. I think this is an awful matchup for Yancy Medeiros. I think ultimately the question is, not if Gregor Gillespie gets the fight to the ground, but how many times he gets the fight to the ground. But Gregor Gillespie is a guy to pay attention to in 2019 at 155 pounds.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. This is a huge fight. Gregor Gillespie is also another guy you can look at to be a breakout star in 2019. I mean, he may have already broken out, but Gregor is not necessarily a name that casual fans know quite yet, but this could be the year that changes. And he's, Yancy Medeiros is a tough fighter, but this is definitely a fight set up for Gillespie to look good. I mean, it's a bad matchup for Yancy, and I think Gregor is going to absolutely dominate this fight. I think this could be an interesting fight just because Yancey is exciting. And he is high impact, and he's the type of guy where if he's getting beaten down for 75% of the fight, he does have the ability and a track record of coming back and turning the table with barrages on the feet. So don't count out Yancey, even though this is set up, I think, for Greg Gillespie to look phenomenal and fantastic. And I think he's a lightweight to absolutely have a breakout year. One of the guys where you look at where he is at the start of the year, and I think at the end of the year, possibly this guy is going to be a contender.
You know, we mentioned about Benavidez and Ortiz, a big fight there at flyweight. You know, I expect Joseph Benavidez to get a win. We got Paige VanZant versus Rachel Ostrovich. Clover Chair, Carl Roberson are your other fights on the main card. You know, Paige VanZant, you know, her stepping back in there. She was on Good Morning America this week. Of course, we all know what was going on with Rachel Ostrovich. It's an interesting fight that I'm interested to kind of see how it plays out.
You think this fight would have been the co-main event if the Greg Hardy fight wasn't happening?
Yeah, you got to think so.
Yeah, that's crazy, ain't it? It's crazy. Yeah, this fight is fine, you know. I mean, this fight's interesting. I don't have long-term expectations for Paige VanZant in MMA. I just feel like I think she's going to transition to do something else. But just because I feel like she has star quality and it makes more sense to be like a broadcaster than a person getting punched in the face. You know, talk to Daniel Cormier about how he feels after a day on the job as a broadcaster versus a professional fighter. I think he feels better after he's had the headset on than instead of the headgear. So that's why I don't necessarily expect her to be long for the sport. But, you know, I think she's going to beat Rachel Ostrovich. Watching their last few fights, Paige VanZant's definitely faced tougher competition. And when she has faced tougher competition, it has not looked great. But when she fights a fighter like Rachel Ostrovich, I think that's an opportunity for her to really impress, and I think she'll do so against Ostrovich. So, you know, I think this is going to be a fight that's going to have a lot of attention, and I'm certainly looking forward to it. Don't know how important it is for the flyweight picture, but these are two fighters in Ostrovich and VanZant where they will get they have a shorter road to contendership status than other women flyweight fighters. If they had identical streaks to Joanne Calderwood, they would likely get the shot first over Calderwood. So it's not unrealistic if the winner of this fight finds themselves competing for the flyweight championship this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ostrovich has got – both of them need some wins. I mean, you look, it's not been a good road here for Paige VanZant in her past couple of fights. For Ostrovich, you know, she's 1-1 in the UFC. You know, I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Ostrovich wins on Saturday night that this is the last time we see Paige VanZant fight.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
I just think she's got so many more opportunities to make just as much money as she can fighting, if not more. And you know, I get there's a competitive aspect of it, but I think at some point you gotta look at what's best for your, you know, long-term career and finances.
Exactly. I mean, I could certainly see that, and I think she's looking at her next loss probably sends her out of the sport, but I think that kind of gets extended. I think she gets the win. But absolutely, PVZ to me is a fighter who you can look at as a pro wrestler, you can look at as a broadcaster, as someone part of a morning show like Good Morning America. So, yeah, I don't think she's long for the sport.
The Shara Roberson fight, I have no idea who to pick in that fight. You know, Glover has been up and down the past couple of years, you know, alternating wins and losses in his past several fights. He's coming off that loss to Corey Anderson. Carl Roberson steps up on short notice, replacing Kutalaba. And, you know, he's coming off that decision win against Jack Marshman. I mean, this is... I guess I would pick Teixeira just because of – but I also kind of feel like, I mean, Teixeira's on the downside of his career.
Yeah, he is, and this could be the perfect timing for Carl Roberson. It's hard for me to pull the trigger on a pick here for Roberson. I think Teixeira will win this fight. I just think heading into this fight, he's just at a higher playing field than Carl Roberson. But this is a close one, and it wouldn't be a shock, though, just because Teixeira has been fighting for a very, very long time. And sometimes these guys age overnight. So it's been hit or miss. But in terms of like the other picks, I do think Teixeira wins. And then I also do think Benavidez wins on the main card.
I will tell you one fight that does interest me on the prelims, on the early prelims on ESPN+, and that's Dennis Bermudez versus T. Edwards. Dennis Bermudez has lost four in a row, moving up to lightweight to take on T. Edwards. This is one of those ones that just kind of interesting to see what Dennis Bermudez looks like. I don't know in terms of you know, how exciting this fight's going to be. I think this could be a little bit of a grappling-type fight. But that one sticks out to me. Kyle Stewart stepping up on short notice. He was actually supposed to take on Jared Gooden in the main event of the LFA show on February 1st. By the way, ironically, on this past Saturday, I interviewed Jared Gooden. And you know, so now he's looking for a new fight for that LFA show. And you go to overthemmareport.com to watch that interview. But, you know, I will say this. I thought Sean Brady should have been the guy to get popped up in this spot. I'm still kind of surprised that Sean Brady hasn't been signed by the UFC. He's the top welterweight prospect out there on the regional scene. But you know, I do think, you know, it's a good opportunity for Kyle Stewart to come in here against Chance Roundtree. I mentioned Muhammad Jeff Neal is a fight that interests me. You know, I interested to see what Alonzo Menifield can do and Mario Bautista, who you're going to hear from momentarily. You know, some of the short notice, which in the interview you're going to hear him talk about, that, you know, you just can't say no to UFC because you don't know if that opportunity is going to come again.
Yeah, and that's the moral of the story. And I think Kyle Stewart's – I think he actually might win that fight against Roundtree.
I do too.
And in terms of other picks, like, I think Bermudez might actually be T. Edwards here. I think if it's an exciting fight, that means T. Edwards won. If it's boring, that means Bermudez won, because I do think Bermudez, like, he's got to play conservative and score with takedowns. I think Bautista is going to have a tough time against Sanhagen Jason. I really do. And Muhammad Neal, I mean, that's a sleeper fight of the night, as you mentioned, that and the Cerrone fight. With those, I think I'm taking Cerrone. I think I'm taking Muhammad.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at – I just got the betting lines up here from Best Fight Odds, and looking at the underdogs, I think I have a really good chance to win. Henry Cejudo, plus 175. Definitely sticks out to me. Rachel Ostrovich plus 135. That one, you know, looks good for me. You know, Joanne Calderwood plus 175. I think that's a good line if you're looking to make a little bit of money. Dennis Bermudez plus 115. You kind of mentioned him there. Bilal Muhammad plus 155 are some of the betting underdogs that kind of stick out to me.
Yeah, in terms of the betting underdog that I'm sticking with, I'm going to ride with the Cowboy. Donald Cerrone at plus 165 against Alexander Hernandez. That's the one that I would ride with, along with the Calderwood at plus 175.
Yeah, I mean, I like Hernandez in that fight, and we're gonna talk a little bit more about Alexander Hernandez later on in the show. I love that fight between Alexander Hernandez and Donald Cerrone. But I mentioned about, I had a chance to talk to Mario Bautista. You're going to hear that interview now as we talk about kind of how all this stuff came together for him. And I talked to him on Monday as he was basically going in between doctor visits to get all the medical requirements done for this fight. And then you're going to hear my interviews with Christina Ricker and Taylor Turner, who both will be a part of Valor Fighting Challenge 54 coming up on Saturday night. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that is stepping up on basically a week's notice to make his UFC debut, Mario Bautista. Of course, I had a chance to talk to Mario in the past. Mario, appreciate the time. Appreciate you, you know, squeezing me in here. I know it's a hectic couple of days for you. You know, one of the things I think a lot of fans just don't realize when you're a short notice debut, as much of it is about just cramming to get ready for your opponent, it's the medical side of this equation where you're going from doctor here to doctor there. Kind of tell the fans a little bit about what life is like for you right now.
It's super, super busy. You know, you got to just jump on everything, get all these medicals done. You got to sign up with USADA. You got to get on the phone with them. All the paperwork from the UFC is just so much work, and try to coordinate everything, and, you know, interviews and, you know, everything that comes with the UFC, you know. So I mean, I just better get used to it. So
So, got to ask, how did you find out about this opportunity and that you were the guy they wanted?
Well, I was about to eat dinner. I'm about to go to bed. My manager called me. It was about 10 o'clock. I wasn't going to answer. I'm like, why is he calling me at 10 o'clock? I'm like, oh, I better answer. And then he was on a three-way with my coach, and he said they called. They need a replacement for John Lineker against Corey Sandhagen. And I said yes. You know, you can't say no to the UFC, so I said yes.
So how quickly from saying yes did you go find the scale to see how much you're weighing?
No, I was already on track for weight because I had a fight lined up about 3 weeks later. So I wasn't too bad. It was just, trying to deal with the jitters and stuff. I went for a walk. I couldn't even eat my food. I couldn't even really sleep that night. I was just all pumped up. So I had to get myself under control on that side.
So who's the first person that you call to let them know that, hey, by the way, get that ESPN Plus subscription ready because I'm fighting next Saturday?
Well, I was waiting till the next morning to let my team know. I just want to let my team know because they're, you know, a big part of like this. But by the time I got to the gym, it was already out. People already knew and, you know, they were coming up to me congratulating me. And so I didn't really get a chance to tell anyone first, so.
Obviously, as a fighter, short notice opportunities are going to come, whether we're talking about the UFC or anywhere else.
Yeah.
For you, I mean, as you are preparing for this matchup and outside of the medical aspect and doing other things, in terms of getting ready for this fight, what is this week like for you? Is it just a lot of just, you know what, I got to worry about myself. I can't worry about the opponent too much. I just got to concentrate on what I can control.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're not going to change the world in a week, you know. So the main thing is just getting mentally prepared for this. There's not much I could do more getting physically. If I try overdoing it right now, I can make things worse for myself. So, but luckily I'm just always in the gym. You know, I don't really do anything else outside the gym, you know, so, you know, we're ready. It's just a matter of getting down, the mental aspect of it. Getting mentally prepared for it.
Have any of your coaches or teammates offered you advice over the last 24 hours to kind of sit there and say, okay, here's what you can expect and here's how you need to react to it?
Yeah, they told me, you know, things I already know. I'm going there to do my job. I'm not going there to sightsee. I'm not going there to see all the celebrities. I'm going there for one thing, to do my job and to do the best I can. You know, I'm there for one reason. So, just don't get distracted, and just be focused. But those are things I already knew.
Of course, they talk about the new UFC jitters, the nerves that every fighter kind of goes through. Every fighter sees it differently. But are you a type of fighter that have you ever been nervous or jittery heading into a fight or even on fight day?
Typically, no. You know, with these short notice ones, I mean, you have less time to be jittery, you know. If this was like a month or two in advance, I'd be jittery all month, you know. But like I said, I can't change anything, you know, and I'm not really that type. You know, I just have to get over the fact that it's for the UFC. You know, this fight could have easily happened, you know, outside of the UFC. So I'm just trying to put that in my head and try not to, you know, think about the big show too much. You know what I mean?
Since everything's gone down with this, have you had a chance to kind of reflect on, like, man, it wasn't that long ago I made my pro debut and now I'm here? Like, I mean, like, in your wildest dreams, did you think it would happen this quick?
No, I didn't think it was going to happen this quick at all. I was just thinking about you. You called me, I think, for my second pro fight, and I was saying I'd be in the UFC. But no, I didn't think it would happen this quick. But like I said, once they call you, you can't say no. I've seen people say no, and they never got called back again. So,
hey, I always use the analogy: when opportunity knocks at your door, you got to bust that thing wide open, yeah. And take that opportunity. And that's what you've done here, Corey, the opponent. Have you had a lot of chance to sit back and really look at what he does to try to evaluate him as a fighter?
Yeah, I've watched some videos on him before. We actually fought on the same card here on a local card before. So I've known about him, and I've sparred against people that move like him, you know, like Sean O'Malley. There's some couple other guys in the gym that have that new style, you know, switching, kind of a lot of movement, Dominic Cruz kind of movement. So it's not the first time I've seen it before. So it won't be a surprise to me.
Obviously, this will be the introduction of yourself to a lot of newer fans who maybe just watch UFC content. What would you want those fans to know about you heading into Saturday?
I want to prove to them, you know, just how tough I am, you know, and the fact that I took this fight. I'm sure other people didn't take this fight. They got the call. They didn't take the fight. So, you know, I'm just going to go out there and, you know, showcase my heart, my skills, you know, and, you know, hopefully they like it. If they don't, whatever.
Anything you want to prove to yourself?
You know, if I can just get to the cage, that'll mean a lot to me, you know, and to get done with this fight. I don't know what I'll be feeling afterwards, but I think I'll be pretty proud of myself no matter what.
I mean, they talk about that walk. Have you even thought about what the walkout music will be?
I think I'm going to come out to Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses. That always gets me pumped up. That gets the crowd pumped up too. So, and that's what I've been coming out to my last few fights. So,
is that like a go-to song where you're on the treadmill to just kind of you know, get the heart rate going?
Dude, once that song comes up, I start running a little bit harder.
You know, obviously, it's you mentioned just a huge opportunity for yourself. You know, and beginning of the year. I mean, you mentioned you were already in preparations for another fight. I mean, what? How do you see 2019 playing out for you?
You know, it's going to be a good year after this fight. You know, this opportunity it gives me the chance to train full time afterwards. You know, no matter what, like I could train full time, and then I'll be able to take my next fight, you know, full camp, you know. And like I said, I'll be able to train full time. I'll be a full time fighter after this. So that's what this opportunity has given me.
Do you feel like, and I understand there's pressure in every fight, no matter whether you're on the, you know, the red side of the fight or the blue side of the fight. But do you feel like maybe Corey has a little more pressure on himself because, you know, hey, he's been here. He had a big fight. And for you, you're coming in and not a lot of people may not know who you are and you're coming in with not as much pressure.
Yeah, it's a win-win for me, you know, and for him to take a fight against, you know, whoever's been saying it online, a nobody. I think it is a little bit more pressure on him. You know, he was going to fight Lineker and now he's fighting a guy that's making his debut. So I think he has a lot more to lose than I do. So
does it fuel you when you hear people like say, oh, this is a nobody coming in, or I have no idea who this guy is, and maybe counting you out? Is that like a little extra motivation?
It is a little bit, you know. I get to prove those guys wrong. I try not to listen to it anyway, but I just get the chance to prove them wrong.
Is it tough to shut out that noise of what people are saying for you? I mean, or is it pretty easy kind of to tune all that stuff out?
It's pretty easy, but now I haven't even really been on Instagram. I'm not even going through the comments no more. I mean, I don't even want to read them, even if they're good or bad. I just want to stay focused. And so I think from now on, I'm not going to be able to get on Twitter and not Twitter, Instagram and read the comments anymore.
You know, it's Monday afternoon when we're talking here. So you're, you know, 4 days out Friday morning of stepping on that scale. I mean, is it more just about the weight cutting aspect of putting yourself in right position to where, you know, to make weight on Friday morning?
Yeah. The weight a little bit. It's the weight's not too much of an issue. I'm always pretty good about the weight cut. I think it's just, like I said, it's more of the mental aspect of it, getting ready for the big show, not letting, you know, the jitters get to me. But, you know, as far as the weight cut and getting ready for it, I'm good on that part.
And we're all going to tune in on Saturday for UFC Brooklyn, UFC on ESPN Plus 1. Mario, as always, I appreciate the time. Let everyone know they can follow you out on the various social media platforms and the sponsors that help support you.
On Twitter, it's at @Bautista_MMA. Instagram, Mario_Bautista MMA. And then Mario Bautista on Facebook.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report podcast is a fighter that's going to be a part of Valor Fighting Challenge Cup on Saturday night in Knoxville, Tennessee. It is Christina Ricker. Of course, you've heard her on the Valor Hour before, and she's got a fight here. She takes on Haley Turner. Christina, I appreciate the time. How's preparations been for this fight?
Oh, it's been really fun. This is one of the fights, my last couple of fights, I didn't have a whole lot of notice, you know, like maybe 4 weeks, which is still a good amount of time, but this one was substantial notice. So far, nothing's fallen through for everything, and I still got to have the holiday. So it's been a really good fight camp, actually.
Now the fact of, you know, kind of having the shorter type notice fights of a couple of weeks, are you at the point now where you're like, you know, maybe I shouldn't be taking those kind of fights?
Oh, no, I didn't. I fight the fight. Cage is a cage. I tend to stay ready. I don't go past even close to 20 pounds overweight. So like over my fight weight or anything like that. So it's kind of, if I can take one, I can take one. So I keep myself ready, keep myself able, always in strength and conditioning, never taking, I guess, time off, if that makes sense.
I mean, do you kind of more view it as I'm not in training camp, I'm just always training?
Yes, correct. Training camp is always.
I mean, do you allow yourself like one day a week off to just kind of, you know, relax and recruit the body?
Oh, yes, yes. I do take some time off. I'm not the best at resting. Jason King has been running my diet this go around. And because we're just experimenting with a couple of things, and it was kind of humorous because he was like, I am scheduling you naps and you have to take naps, which is kind of nice. And I'm trying to get used to that, but I'm not really I'm just kind of a go-getter, I guess, or a locomotive. I don't know. Once you get me going, it's really hard to stop. So I can function off very little sleep and do very well. So I am taking time to rest and maybe treating my body more as a machine. It has to recover, and I've done a lot of napping, so that's been nice.
That's what I've heard from athletes in the past. They say one of the things you learn about is how important sleep is, just to kind of, you know, hey, going there, having 4 hours sleep, not necessarily, you know, great for your body. I mean, is it kind of some of these things since the last time we saw you, just kind of, you kind of step back and said, okay, there's some things I've got to change to, you know, make sure the result's much different this time?
Yes. And I think rest is a big part of it, and really treating my body well. Cause I don't know, you look at all those motivational things as like go harder, go faster, go more, right? And everybody's like, get out there and get it. And I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with, you know what, take a little bit of time and maybe don't work your muscles out today. Like, don't go on a 3 mile run. Just relax, just eat popcorn and relax. And that's a little difficult for me, but, I'm getting used to it, and I kind of like it more. It's almost about respecting myself in a way, I guess you could say, kind of respecting the fact that my body works really hard and it carries me through. And I also kind of enjoy it. I enjoy pushing it. I enjoy training. So learning to enjoy, like, bubble baths. Like, I got super into bubble baths. Those are really fun.
I mean, I was going to ask you that. I mean, when you talk about relaxing, you mentioned about popcorn, you mentioned about bubble baths. I mean, is there anything you can do to get your mind off, like, say, this fight coming up here on Friday or Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things. I'm really into plants. I have a lot of plants. I really like cacti and that whole genre. And then there's a couple other, like, Sansevieria plant lands that I really enjoy. So like a nerdy year old, like 85 year old woman, I usually take time watering and grooming my plants, and taking care of those. And it's quiet. I've got two pups, Jeffrey and Freya, and they keep me on my toes 100% of the time. So, I mean, there's different things that, like, when I'm at home, And James and I, since my husband also fights, we kind of made a rule of like, since we're always at one gym or another, and either one of us has a fight or both of us have a fight, that at a certain point in the day, like there's no more fight talk. There's no more gym talk. There's none of it. Like you have to take a moment and step back from it. So we do have times in the evening where we don't talk about it. We don't watch videos about it. Like it's just not even in the radar, just so we don't get burnt out and that we kind of keep our interests open and pursue all the passions that we're interested in. So,
okay. I got to ask the question now. Does your husband critique your fights or do you critique his fights? Or is that kind of like, no, we don't do that. We don't want to cause any trouble.
He has been in it for a whole lot longer than I have, like a decade longer. So he's actually been in my corner for all but one of my fights. So I do take a lot of criticism from him, but it's kind of more welcomed because he was there the first day I came to the gym, and I had no experience. So he's watched my growth, whereas I came in like midway through his career when he first went pro. And I was like, I couldn't tell him to do anything. I couldn't shoot a double leg. So what am I going to say? So I critique maybe a little bit more in the area of like, I know him emotionally and mentally. So if something got to him in that regard, I feel like he and I have conversations about that. But we hold a pretty good teammate mentality, probably a little more so on his end. Is he more like a coach? Cause he can actually kind of critique me, with certain techniques. But he's a very calming sort. So he also likes setting the tone in a room of everybody shut up and be calm.
And your fight here, you've got Haley Turner. She's 2-1 in her career. She's coming off an armbar win back in November. You know, when Tim and Eric, you know, say, hey, this is a fight offer. What got you excited about the fight?
Not a super fast turnaround, but my last fight was September. I don't really like taking time off. So I was excited to have one. I used to get really built up about different opponents, but now I really kind of don't, just because I've had situations where they drop out and replace. So it doesn't, I mean, a person's a person. Does that make sense? Like you just have to go for it with whatever opponent in front of you. So it's an interesting thing though, because like Haley's last fight was my, teammate Taylor Turner.
Yeah.
And so, that holds a little bit more of a, oh, well you fought my teammate, like, a little bit more, I guess, of a competitive edge. I don't know. I guess so. I'm kind of like have a little more insight.
Was it one of those things that you picked Taylor's brain to say, hey, what did you see here? You know, was that something that kind of gets you ready for this?
A little bit, yeah. I prefer like action over talking. And so it was more of, hey, we're going to spar. Can you spar like, you know, you just fought her. And it's very different to talk about the way somebody moves and to actually feel the way someone moves. And Taylor's had the experience of feeling how this girl moves. And you can't get that without actually competing against them or rolling with them. You're sparring. So it's been, I think it'll be very beneficial. You never know though. I'm still leaving it out because Haley probably went in there with a game plan for Taylor. So the way she fought her will probably be completely different than the way she fought me. Will fight me. So, I don't know. I kind of have a few ideas of exactly what I want to do, but then I'm also leaving it open to, oh, well, maybe all of a sudden she'll become a wrestler and I'll have to deal with that. You know, like you don't want to go in with one strict game plan because then you're screwed.
Now this fight card, you've got a lot of your teammates throughout this fight card. Is that, what's the biggest pro and cons of that? Is it, you know, I think outside looking in, people say, you know, hey, if you're fighting later on the night and maybe something goes wrong with your teammate, maybe that's something emotionally gets stuck in you. What's your kind of view of that?
I know for me personally, some others handle it better, but I don't want to know. I've had the opportunity to be on cards with multiple fighters from our gym, but never this many. And I am really close, obviously, my husband's fighting, with some of them. So that's going to be a situation where I just don't want to know. Like, I have to go to work. This is work. This is my fun time. Like, this is the time I get to have. So I'll probably sequester myself backstage and just not want to know the outcomes of the majority of them, because it will, the times beforehand, it has gotten to me a little bit, especially if it's a loss. Not so much that it's a loss, but even if it's a win, it's like, well, are they injured? Like, did anybody get hurt? Are they okay? That type of deal, because it's a pretty ruthless sport and injuries happen. So it's kind of one of those, I don't want to know. I block it out. I don't need to know. I love you all. Like, we put in our time weeks and weeks and weeks ago in the gym, and we'll see you on the other side type of deal. So I don't really like to know. Right now it's a little difficult because everybody's cutting weight and maybe a little on the crankier side. And beforehand you only had like one or two people like that. And now there's like, I don't know, 12 of us who are kind of cranky. But it's good. It's good to see that side of your teammates and work through things. And at the same time, the other side of that coin is like, well, we're all going to war. Like, you have a camaraderie of like, well, we're all going to war together. Like, it literally feels like a battle that we're all preparing for. So I don't know, good and bad things. It's been an interesting past couple of weeks for sure. I'm sure this next week will get even more interesting.
Of course, I'll be up there on Friday. This will be my first trip to Knoxville. So any good food recommendations of a place I got to go?
Oh, food. Okay, yeah. Let's see. Market Square's got a whole line of restaurants that are just phenomenal. Down there, I even like these as my refeed meals sometimes. You've got like Stock and Barrel, which is fantastic burgers, like really good like pub bar food burgers. They're delicious. Not Watson's, if you want more of like a sushi thing. Nama Sushi is really big in Knoxville, and they're fantastic. Oh man, now I'm really thinking about food. Oh, it's going to be so good. there's a lot of really great places that I will be enjoying come like 13 days from now.
Once the fight's over, is there like a go-to food item for you? Like something you couldn't have all throughout the preparations for this fight that you're like, once the fight's over, it's on.
It kind of changes each time. I don't know why, but it changes around a little bit. I really wanted just a glass of wine. For the love of God, I want a glass of wine. So that'll probably be first. So I'm going after, I think there's booze even at the Coliseum. We'll see what's there. If not, I'll be packing them in my car. Who knows? I have actually a travel thermos, like a travel wine container, like to keep your wipes cold. I'm pretty dedicated in that area too, other than my plants. I like wine. But food-wise, I've been just really craving chocolate this time around. I am not a sweets person. I'm a full-out, like, fatty, salty fries, that type of stuff. But this time around, I just really want, like, some dark chocolate ice cream. That is what I'm all about this time around. Middle of winter.
Yeah, I was talking to another fighter earlier today, and the thing they said to me is their go-to is they have chocolate waiting in the back for them. They've already bought it. It's sitting at their home. They look at it every day, and it's like motivation for them.
That's fair. I can respect that. I have a couple of bottles of wine just like that, and they'll come with me. So that sounds great.
But, of course, this all goes down on Saturday Night Valor Fighting Challenge 54 there in Knoxville, Tennessee, as you'll be able to see Christina take on Haley Turner. Christina, I really appreciate time. Let everyone know they can follow you on social media and, of course, those sponsors that help support you.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on Facebook at Christina Ricker, and then on Instagram, I think it's Christina_Ricker. And you'll see my fighter face up there, my fighting profile. And then my sponsors right now, obviously KMAA, they've built me from the ground up. So I'm incredibly thankful. Eric Turner, Joey Zonar, they took a really marshmallowy person and made them into a fighter. So that's pretty phenomenal. I don't know who else can do that. And then my strength and conditioning coaches, Chloe Padilla and Frankie Padilla at Frankie's Body Shop, who just ran me through the like murderous workout of the year. That was fantastic. and they have kept me a well-oiled machine for these past couple of weeks, and they keep me that way when I'm off season too. So those are my sponsors right now, who I love and adore and just put me through hell every week, and it's my favorite.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report podcast at a fire screen, a part of Valor Fighting Challenge 54 on Saturday night. She's going to take on Ashley Samples. It is Taylor Turner making her return to Valor. Of course, she made her pro debut back in Valor in 2014. Taylor, I appreciate the time. It's fight week, so you know, what's this week like for you?
Well, you know, I actually kind of had a little bit of a scare last week of just kind of like, oh, did I have an injury? And, you know, was it going to work? And I'm all good. Everything's good. It just gets a little bit nerve-wracking sometimes. So honestly, I'm super excited this round because it almost got taken away from me. So this week, I'm like, I get to cut weight. I get to have fun. I get to do here. So this is probably the most exciting fight camp I've ever had because when it's almost taken away, sometimes it really makes you appreciate it. So this week, it's a mix of obviously dieting and lots of training, just kind of getting that last couple pounds off and just getting ready to go. So, you know, we work so hard. It's one of those weeks that's just like Saturday can't come fast enough. So that's just what this week is about.
It's not too often during fight week I have a fighter tell me that they can't wait to cut weight. Usually it's kind of very much different on that. But obviously you've got Ashley here, you know, both of you. You know, been working hard for this one. What's kind of your thoughts on Ashley as his opponent, and what do you see as the biggest threat she's going to offer you?
Well, she is definitely, I think, known for her stand-up. I mean, she's a really clean, pretty striker. I mean, she's got some really good hands, and she's fast and smart with it. So I think that's probably going to be the biggest challenge she's going to offer. I mean, you know, at this level, everybody is well-rounded, so you got to be, you know, ready for it all versus when you're first starting off and it's your first or second amateur fight and you're kind of just getting your feet wet. Some people may have more of a jiu-jitsu background or this background, but by this point you're well-rounded. So I'm watching for everything, but she's known for her stand-up. So that's the biggest thing.
I mean, I know it's about you. It's not necessarily about what your opponent is going to offer. I mean, is it a mixture of the two of, yeah, this is about me, but also kind of understanding what she does well?
You know, it kind of has to be. And I know people approach things, the fight camps and the way they fight and get in the cage in a lot of different ways. And for us, you know, we do watch film. I mean, you are going into a type of war, and if you have the opportunity to kind of see what your opponent is, you know, is good at, what they offer, why not get the upper hand on that? So yes, it is about them. I know that her strongest area is probably, or one of her strong, really good areas is her stand up. So I feel very confident standing up too, but if I feel more confident on the ground, then why would I not want to bring it into my world and go somewhere like that? So it's about me trying to do what I'm good at and, you know, and have fun with it. I like MMA because you have to be so well-rounded and smart in all different directions. But I mean, if you ignore your opponent completely, I mean, you're, in my opinion, just ignoring a huge piece of the game. So it helps to have both, but you can't get obsessed with your opponent either. I've definitely had that before where I've like, oh my goodness, I looked at my opponent 10 times a day and I'm like, oh, you know, they're a person and they're training this hard. And am I training that hard? Oh, yeah, I am. You know, like the back and forthness and that can get in your head. So you got to be careful not to get that far into it too.
Is that one of the biggest learning lessons that you've taken in this game? It's just, I don't know if it's like, you know, you turn your brain off at some point about the fight, but it's.
You know, yes. Like I would say, and I we just had the WBR TV crew came out and I told them a similar thing about one thing I love about this sport is it's smart and you're constantly evolving in it. And I think it teaches you a lot about yourself, combat sports does. So it's hard for me to say what the biggest lesson or takeaway that I've had from this, but at this point in my career, in retrospect, I can look back and see the different mental states you kind of go through and how it can affect you. I mean, when I first started off, it was just to see if I could defend myself. So you're not really worried about your record or that kind of stuff. Just like, what's this? And I want to see. And then you get, you know, a couple wins and you're like, oh, wow. Well, I guess I might be good at this. Maybe I can go far and everybody expects me to win now. And then that's when it can eat away at you almost. And you put on these self-imposed pressures. And I think that's when my career started taking a little bit of a downturn mentally. And then in the past couple camps, we've worked really hard at peeling apart what those kind of pressures were and what I was doing wrong mentally. And we worked at those. And so now I'm at a spot where I think, you know, I worked hard. I got to go see if the mental stuff works as much as my physical stuff does. And I'm, the only way to try it is to get in the cage and do it. So I've learned a lot through this process, and that's kind of the, you know, Cliff Notes version, but hopefully that answers the question.
Is this game more mental for you than it is physical?
It is. You know, I've been, I was at the University of Minnesota on the crew team there, and that's a very physical, like draining sport. I've been a marathon runner. I mean, talk about something that you do for literally hours and your body's killing you and you want to quit and you're like, no. So I like the push of the physical in our gym and training with the men and the women that I do. You know, it's, I feel even when I'm against somebody who's way bigger, stronger than I am, you know, a guy or something like that, I like the challenge of it. So for me, it's been kind of getting out of my own head, you know, and following along the path of that. So that's at least where I am now. The physical is important. You can't go in there yet again at this level, especially without the right strength and conditioning and physical part. But that for me, I don't think is a problem. I think it's always been the mental part.
I'm sure as you prepare for this fight, you have probably visualized this fight a million different ways of, you know, one little thing here can kind of change the trajectory, how the fight goes. But how do you ultimately, do you see the victory coming for yourself?
You're right. I mean, as you say that, as I've been running and, you know, put my music on and go, I visited a couple different ways and some neat things. And obviously I'd like a finish, you know, I mean, most people don't want it to go all the rounds and everything. And I think it would be awesome to get some good, like ground and pound stoppage or, one of the neat, like submissions I've been kind of working on that are fun and a little bit trickier. And, I like the transitions of submission. So, you know, you go for one thing and it might miss, but you miss it on purpose. So it leads into a second thing. And that's the fun part of jujitsu for me. So it would be kind of fun to be able to do that in a live setting. So I hope that it goes there. I win via ground and pounder submission on the ground in the first 30 seconds.
I mean, do you ever concern yourself with you visualize how a fight's going to go a certain way? And that it just because it's so much in your memory throughout the training camp that you find yourself maybe trying to force that to happen on fight night?
You know, yes, I definitely, when I fought two fights ago, Gina, her name was, I fought down in Virginia, and I remember we had been working on this one move, and I was, it got against the cage, and I was like, oh, here's my thigh pry, we call it, it's a move in my head coach and husband kind of made up and that we've been working on. I was like, oh, I'll get it. And I didn't quite get it. And I got rolled over right away. And I was like, well, that's not how this was supposed to go. And it kind of threw me off a little bit because in my mind, I was like, I worked on the move and I did the move and this is the move I wanted. Nope, here it is. And it didn't work like I wanted it to. So you can't be too attached to it. So that was a lesson out of that one that I got. Have a plan, but we're willing to throw the plan out the window.
Of course, Knoxville Mixed Martial Arts, there is a ton of fighters throughout this fight card on Saturday. Do you like fighting with a lot of your teammates on the same card, or is it kind of a pros and cons about it?
Pros and cons, I'd say. Overall, I like it. I like that they have the opportunity. I mean, I'm one of the strength and conditioning coach nutritionists too, and I like to fight if I want to fight. There's a lot of them that are really striving to get to the huge stage and sooner than later and that kind of thing. You know, they're much younger and everything, and they're like my little kids in some ways, and I just want to see them succeed. So the opportunity to fight with them on the card is fantastic because I get to watch them. I get to be in the training camp with them. There's a camaraderie of it. My first pro fight, you know, like you said, I'm coming full circle back to Valor. There was we had a bunch of our KMA people and we all did wonderful that night. So that's good. But you know, the cons are, I want to be there for everyone. I want to help them with their weight cuts. I want to, you know, be in their corner. I want to do that part. And so it can get a little bit distracting. So I have to remember, as we work out, sometimes I got to put myself first, and that's okay too. And obviously yet again, my husband is my head coach. So, you know, how I perform affects him and how everybody else performs affects him. And so I want to be there for him, you know, wins and losses. And you just, there's lots of hats to wear. So it's tricky sometimes to maneuver that, all those kind of avenues. But overall, I like it. I'm glad that my teammates, my family is getting a chance to fight, and I'm glad I am too. So why not do it together?
And of course, for the fans who are not in the Knoxville area, you can actually go over to radioinfluence.com and you can get your virtual ticket. The link is right there on the main page to watch these fights on Saturday night in Knoxville, and look forward to it. So Taylor, I really appreciate the time. Let all my listeners know where they can follow you on social media and of course those sponsors that help support you.
I'm on social media, on Facebook, I'm under Knoxville Martial Arts Academy, and also Taylor Turner Athlete. And then on Instagram, I am at TaylorMade Fitness, Tennessee. And my sponsors, I have to give first and foremost to Frankie's Body Shop, my strength and conditioning coach, Frankie Padilla. And then, my husband's sitting right here next to me doing it. And then Knoxville Martial Arts Academy, Overhaul Karate, they're big supporters of us. All of my wonderful people I'm going to have to post them on there. I'm sorry, like I said, it's been kind of one of those long training nights and stuff. But I've gotten some great people who follow me and people I train and who help me out in lots of different ways. So thank you to all of them.
And there was my conversations with Mario Bautista, Christina Ricker, and Taylor Turner. Of course, Mario Bautista making his UFC debut on Saturday night, the opening matchup on ESPN, the preliminary card. Of course, that'll start at 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific time. Of course, your main card on ESPN Plus will start at 10 p.m. Eastern time. And, of course, Valor Fighting Challenge, I mentioned earlier in the show, I will be in Knoxville heading up there on Friday. You can actually go to radioinfluence.com right now, and you can purchase your virtual ticket to see these fights on Saturday, which I believe the first fight starts at 5 o'clock Eastern time. So I always say, you know, I always love going to regional MMA because you never know. There's crazy things you see in regional MMA. You really never know what you might walk into.
Yeah, sometimes the guy selling popcorn during the first fight in the seventh fight. It's crazy in a regional MMA show. That's why you got to go check it out. You might see, and the best part to me, the most rewarding part is watching guys who, and girls who end up being stars one day, end up being UFC caliber fighters, which is what you're going to get. You're going to get those diamonds on these fight cards, but you're also going to get the absurdity. You're going to get people in fighter kits. You're going to get fights in the crowd. It's always a fun time to go check out regional MMA.
Dude, I it was a couple weeks ago. Working, we were on the road somewhere for the Bucks, and I'm in the press box kind of getting some things done, and I saw a dude walking around the press box. I think he had to work for Fox, who had a fighter kit on. I couldn't believe it. Like I did a double take.
Imagine a press. When was the last time you saw a guy in an NFL press room that had a jersey on?
Well, in the press box, you do see it because they bring in like VIP, you know, fans who like, you know, or VIPs. So you do see that sometimes, but it was just always because look, anytime you see someone wearing a fighter kit, you're like, huh, really? Someone has one of those things?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's like,
also, I still say those fighter kits, man, if they were like $30, I think they'd sell a lot more of them. But I mean, like, they're like $90 or something. It's crazy.
They don't even look great. Yeah, that's the other thing. They look gross. They look like a Tide Pod. I mean, they just don't look great. I mean, yeah, I don't know who would buy a fighter kit. Screwed up that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, I think some of the shirts I thought they've made have been pretty cool, but the quote-unquote fighter jersey thing, no, those look awful. Would never, never. If you see me wearing one of those things, you know someone, I've lost a bet.
You lost a bet, or you're trying to be ironic. That's about it.
You know, you mentioned about, you know, going to regional MMA, you can potentially see that next breakout star. And this is something you kind of wanted to talk about is kind of our predictions of breakout star in 2019. Of course, on last week's podcast, we gave some bold predictions and various things we're looking at 2019. And breakout star in 2019, I'm going to look at a guy that's fighting on Saturday night, and that's Alexander Hernandez.
Well, ooh, that's a great pick, Jason. Well, what do you see in Hernandez?
I think he's got that personality. I think he has he's a tremendous fighter. I think he's has a skill set that people are going to enjoy fighting. And you know, I think when you're talking about these breakout stars, you're trying to find somebody who isn't quite in that top 15 yet. I mean, look, I think Gregor Gillespie is another guy you could point to.
Absolutely. I mean, I made a list, and both those fighters were on there. I think at the end of the day, Alexander Hernandez has a great opportunity to start his breakout campaign there, because it's like, can you think of a better fighter to do it than with Donald Cerrone? He's one of those guys you want to call out because he's going to give you an exciting fight. He has a great name value, and at the end of the day, he's finding himself in the feature fight on the first broadcast on ESPN. So that's a great call. Gregor has so much talent that it's not unrealistic to think that he's going to go out there and climb to the top of the division. I mean, I wrote down a lot of names, and breakout means a bunch of different things. Like, to me, you could almost make a case that Henry Cejudo could be the breakout star 2019 in terms of, if you ask the question, will there be a fighter that will break out to be a superstar in terms of drawing pay-per-view? Which fighter has the best chance of doing that? Now, there is not a single fighter I look at and think there's any chance, or a big chance. Cejudo has a chance, just that he's put in a spot to get a win over TJ Dillashaw to start the year, and he has the history with the Olympics. Potentially, he could be a super-duper star. So there's a possibility there. In terms of like going from – it's clear they have a lot of potential. And the other one's Israel Adesanya that I would put in that category in terms of super-duper star possibility. Also, Ben Askren. Forgot about that one. Ben Askren could be a super-duper star. He gets a couple wins. He has the best talking ability.
Oh, God. His Twitter game is just so on point. Did you see his him and Gaslam going at it on Twitter?
No, I didn't. What was going on there?
So I got to pull it up. I saw it this morning, and I just started laughing because I saw Kelvin Gastelum's first tweet where it was Kelvin Gastelum, because this is about Tyron Woodley talking about going up to 85. Gastelum tweets, haha, at T. Woodley, has never wanted this smoke after we fought the first time. He can't compete at middleweight. Which Ben Askren, of course, is team Woodley goes, hey, fat boy, he beat you with a broken foot and you didn't come within 10 pounds of making weight. I love me some trash talk, but you should get real. Now, Gaslam responds with, I'm sorry, I don't know who you are, young man, with the Conor McGregor gif. Who the fuck is that guy? And then, of course, Ben Askren's response with, Kelvin, A, one, I have more followers than you. Two, no one believes your pathetic lie. Three, maybe try a little originality. Four, you miss weight by 10 pounds. I mean, holy crap. What kind of person does that? Gaslam goes, LOL, chill out, big boy. Welcome to the UFC. I remember my first UFC fight, too. I'm sure you're excited about it. And Askren's response was, you're a master of original trash talk. I'll never hard that before. I mean, Ben Askren, like, God, man, good to have him in the UFC.
Yeah, he might actually be my pick for breakout superstar. He has the ability to talk. He's so smart, and he's probably going to have a lot of success. In terms of breakout fighter, though, I kind of nailed it down to two people in the UFC. And in Bellator, I mean, you could pick anybody who's had success in the prelims. You know, Tyrell Fortune, this could be the year for him to have a big year. But the two fighters I looked at is Macy Barber.
Oh, yeah, I like that one.
What an impressive start to her UFC career. She was very talented, and also she knows what she's doing when it comes to promoting herself. Mm-hmm. So she'd be my pick. But the other fighter I looked at is, I think he's going to return in spring, Sean O'Malley. He was gone for a while, but this guy is so entertaining inside the cage, outside the cage. You can't not watch him, and he's also very talented. So my two picks for breakout fighters of the year would be Sean O'Malley and Macy Barber.
I tell you what, I'll give you two Bellator fighters to maybe pay attention to in terms of breakout stars, and well, we'll tease for you. They're both scheduled to be on next week's podcast. Juan Archuleta and Ricky Bandejas. Of course, they're fighting next Saturday. To me, those are two guys to pay attention to. in Bellator in terms of guys coming up. Of course, Juan's just got a tremendous record, by the way, training partner of TJ Dillashaw. And of course, Ricky is just, we all remember what he did to James Gallagher. James Gallagher's still asking for that rematch, which I'm like, why? What's the point of that rematch? You got knocked out cold, dude. Like, he's moved past you.
Mm-hmm. Totally. In my list, I do have winner of Bandejas Archuleta written down.
By the way,
I don't know who's going to win that fight. I really don't.
Oh, yeah. No idea. I mean, I'll say this one. I've already talked to Juan, and, Juan's not a trash talker. That's just not a saying. Ricky's not a trash talker either. But one of the things that Juan did say to me, he said, he goes, I couldn't believe how many people just didn't give Ricky a chance in that first fight. He's like, you know, and he goes, he showed a lot to me. And so that's really a great fight. Also, speaking of next week's podcast, Aaron Pico is scheduled to be on the podcast as well. Of course, next week, well this week is pretty much all about the UFC. Next week will be all about Bellator 214. Of course, Fight Car went through a little bit of a small change as Rafael Lovato Jr. no longer on the fight card. Of course, Gegard Mousasi had pulled out of their fight, so Henry Krause versus Aaron Pico is now the co-main event of that fight card. Of course, we also have Jack Swagger, a.k.a. Jake Hager, making his pro debut. By the way, speaking of Bellator, something I forgot to mention last week, I want to say it happened on Tuesday of last week, was the news that Mike Mazzulli had turned down a fight it was a female fight that was going to be a part of the preliminary card. And I kind of wanted to discuss a little bit about what kind of happened there. And the fight that was turned down was Anastasia Bruce versus Valerie Lareda. And of course, Valerie is coming in all the praise around her because of her Taekwondo. And the reason the fight was turned down was because of Anastasia Bruce, who had a amateur record of 0-12 slated to make their pro debut. And look, ultimately, Bellator is going to take this one on the chin for this one. But, you know, because, A, the fact of they put the news out there, they released it to MMA Junkie. But after it had not been approved yet by the commission. But something I think a lot of people should know about this is, you know, when Bellator goes into a market, whether we're talking they're going into the Rio Grande where Daniel lives, here in the Tampa Bay area where I live, or say they're going up to Mohegan, which they're going next month, is they use local promoters to put together these preliminary card fights. That's how they work, and it's a very good mindset to have. You know, work with a local promoter who knows, you know, the fighters that, well, can sell tickets. But you know, Bellator's got to take this one on the chin a little bit. I'm sure there have been a commission that would have regulated this fight, but when you're 0-12 as an amateur, man. Kind of tough to see a commission grant you a license.
You got to win a few amateur fights before you fight a professional fight, and before you fight a fighter like Lareda, who's like a fighter with an extensive background, even though she's making her pro debut. So, yeah, I mean, embarrassing. That's like Explode Fight Series, right? That's a throwback to the Explode Fight Series.
So, I saw somebody said, is there an East Coast version of the Explode Fight Series?
Yeah, because once you have those fighters run up that 0-12 record, you know something fishy's going on. You know, we don't want another soccer mom situation that we had with Alima-Lay McFarlane to start her career off.
Like, I'm surprised like a Explode Fight Series has not been able to parlay this in some type of streaming deal.
People just broadcast.
That'd be like straight up reality TV. Hey, you in the crowd? You want to fight? Let's go.
I know. And I'm sure someone's pitching that idea somewhere to put on some streaming service because, yeah, I mean, that's how pro wrestling started, Jason. You in the crowd want a pro wrestling match, and the person that goes in the crowd with the pro wrestler, and if the pro wrestler starts losing, they would have like a curtain, and the pro wrestler would take the person to the curtain, and somebody behind the curtain would knock the fan that's winning in the back of the head with like a piece of metal. And so the wrestler would never lose.
Well, it's like I sent you that video last week of the camera guy was a Singapore cane. You used it. I'm like, Daniel, you're missing out here, man.
I think he used light tubes or TV. I don't know what the hell he was. But, yeah, that's what I got to do next. I'm a camera guy for a wrestling show. And watch out, pro wrestlers. I'm coming after you. Just don't come back after me. I'm not going to win that fight.
Also, something to note, Michael Chiesa won the 10-year challenge thing that's going around on social media, where he posts a picture of you from 10 years ago and today, and he used his the caddy from Happy Gilmore and a picture of him today. I was like, oh, Michael Chiesa, you won. And then did you see what Dana White did?
What did he do?
He did a picture of himself, and on the right-hand side and the left-hand side was an egg.
That's pretty damn good.
There's been a couple of good ones I've seen some athletes do, and I'm like, oh, that's good. I'm liking it. That's and then the Chiesa one, like, we started seeing some of the people's responses to it. Like, they brought up the duck call guy, Willie. God, what was that show called? Duck Commander.
Yeah, Duck Dynasty.
Duck Dynasty. They brought up, you know, he should have been Willie. So yeah, there's been.
He brought up Forrest Gump when he was running.
Yeah. Someone. I think I saw someone do that as well. So yeah. Michael Chiesa, you definitely won Twitter with that one. Also, want to mention, I saw Castanganos appealing her UFC 232 loss, which, by the way, I think she has about a 0% chance of winning this appeal. Basically, they're trying to go on a technicality in the unified rules. They're basically trying to say a toe is an eye gouge, which I'm like, yeah, that ain't going to fly.
My bad. I couldn't unmute my microphone. You can't rewrite the rules. It's the equivalent of, look, it was a freak accident, but it's the same thing of trying to overturn a fight if you get punched in the face with a closed fist. I mean, punching the eye with a closed fist. It's just, it's not a part of the rules. The way it was worded was kind of weird. Like, it was like, we're going to stop people from endangering fighters or whatever. She's not going to win this. This is a waste of time. This was a freak accident. Maybe you could look into changing the rules, but to be honest with you, I wouldn't even do that. I think that's way too hard to adjudicate in real time. And at the end of the day, she got kicked in the face and kicked in the eye. That really sucks, but I don't think she has a case at all.
Final thing to mention in this week's podcast is the UFC 234 lineup. Boy, the UFC has got it praying nothing happens to their main event and co-main event. Otherwise, I don't know how you put that fight card on pay-per-view.
If something happens, I mean, you're talking about back-to-back events that get canceled. You know, you said 233 canceled, and you go out there, you can't main event the show with Ricky Simon and Ronnie. Yeah. I mean, that card is a two-fight main card, and everything else is interesting, but it's not a draw.
Yeah, I saw when the lineup got announced, I saw that. I was like, ooh, man, it's top-heavy. It is top-heavy.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to those top two fights, but again, like, God, it is rough in terms of there are plenty of interesting fights if you're a hardcore MMA fan, but there are fights that matter and fights that feature guys who maybe will matter one day from now. And it's full with a bunch of those and not a whole lot of the former.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there is – I thought it was interesting. I got I want to pull this tweet up that I got last week from somebody who had mentioned about how UFC 232 was the first pay-per-view they had bought in a while. And they mentioned about how they were a Chris Cyborg fan. And I thought I liked the tweet. Well, that's one of the things I like to use for Twitter. Is I do. Okay, I found it. No, that is not. It was a tweet that basically had talked about, you know, hey, I just haven't found value in the UFC. And they said, hey, I'm a big Chris Cyborg fan, but prior to UFC 232, I just thought it was, you know, it was a one-sided fight, so I wasn't going to pay $65. I mean, that 234 lineup, you know, it, I think for a lot of fans, that's going to be a tough sell at $65.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, I think it's just you got to have a hankering to have a fight night. You got to just want to sit around the TV and watch it because you look at that card and it's like, I think you're looking at, the UFC has become a 3 to 4 times a year event for people. When's Conor going to fight? When's Jones going to fight?
I was sitting in a marketing meeting last week and we were talking about that. We were saying, when is the next big UFC fight?
Simply put, I don't think there's one on the radar.
Oh, I said it's not booked yet. The answer is, A, when is Conor McGregor fighting? Which we should be getting some clarification on that here in 2 weeks when the Nevada State Athletic Commission has their hearing. Or do we get a Brock Lesnar fight? Do we see Jones Cormier? I mean, I mean, when the pay-per-view buy rate came out for 232, I was surprised to see how well it did. I mean, you know, and how much I think that's a combination of John Jones' return and also kind of the drawing power that Chris Cyborg has. But I look at some of these cards, I'm just like, ugh.
They're a bunch of good cards, but they're nothing that my cousin who kind of likes MMA is going to talk to me about.
Yeah, it's one of these things where I don't – 234 is not a fight card that I think I'm going to have buddies of mine who are just – aren't necessarily MMA fans, just sports fans are going to sit there and go, hey, man, you getting the fights? I want to come over and watch the fights. I don't think 234 was that. 235 could be that with John Jones, just because it's John Jones. You know, you got Woodley Usman, which is a great fight. You know, 235 is a great fight card lineup, but yeah, there isn't that. There's not that fight that's currently booked that you're just like, I can't. I mean, there's certain fights I want to see in 2019. Like, if you told me Khabib Ferguson was headlining 234, all right, sign me up. Cool, I'm ready to go. Now, I would not purchase it till the day of the fight because, well, I know what happens.
Yeah, that's.
I wonder how many people purchase a pay per view more than 24 hours before the pay per view starts.
It can't be that many. It absolutely. I mean, those people are sociopaths.
Here's the question. I would. This is the thing I would love to know. What is the percentage of UFC pay per view buys that come within 30 minutes of the pay per view starting?
I think 30 minutes is interesting. I think people usually buy a couple hours before, but 30 minutes. I don't know, man. You're cutting it close there.
Would you ever buy a UFC pay-per-view before the weigh-ins?
No, never. Absolutely not. You would be nuts, too. I mean, we have seen the marquee fights be taken down too many times in our lifetimes to do that.
Dude, it makes me think of, like, you remember when Fedor Mitrione was supposed to happen back in California back in, what was that, January of last year?
Yes.
Could you imagine, like, because I remember getting a text like, hey, this fight's not happening. Could you imagine if you were a ticket holder and you're so excited to see Fedor and then you find out that fight's not happening literally 3 hours before it's supposed to happen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are people that definitely went to that event without knowing that fight was off.
Dude, how pissed would you be?
I would be so pissed because, like, you spent the whole month looking forward to watching one of the greatest of all time fight and now you don't get it. Absolutely, I'd be furious.
You got Fedor next week?
That's true, man. And that might be the last time we see him fight because Ryan Bader might pummel him into the canvas. That's going to be a tough fight for Fedor.
God, but why do I think Fedor wins? I don't know. Just gut feeling.
That would be one hell of a story. I'll tell you that much. That'd be one of the great stories that we see. Because, I mean, Ryan Bader is one of the best light heavyweights in the world, and he's a great heavyweight.
I'll tell you the most, and we'll get into Bellator 214 next week. The thing that really jumped out to me was there was a press release Bellator sent out this week with the fight card, and I was like, there's only like, I think they only listed 5 prelim fights. And of course, it's all local fights. It was so weird to me because usually those cards, you got about 10 prelim fights, which, let's be honest about it, are putting butts in the seats.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the following week, and I think you have, like, God, I think it looks like, I can't even count. I think there are 12 prelim fights in the England card the following week. So, yeah,
it seems... Someone, I haven't found the answer out to this, but someone said, they're like, hey, I don't think that's Aaron on Paramount or DAZN. I don't quote me on that, but I haven't seen any broadcast details in terms of outside of the UK.
Oh, the prelims or the whole card?
The whole card. The one that's headlined by Patricky Pitbull.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Wikipedia, every other card says, like, we're on Paramount or we're on DAZN, but that card actually says neither.
Yeah, I know. That would be interesting. I mean, yeah, you look at there is 5 prelim fights on Bellator 214, and, you know, most of the fighters have 4 pro fights or less for the most part. I mean, there's 2 guys on the prelims making their pro debuts.
Yeah, I mean, you said these are just guys, local guys selling tickets.
But that main card, man, that's a great main card. I'm looking forward to Bellator 214 next week.
Absolutely, back to back. We'll get back to back good cards throughout the year,
dude. I think starting with Saturday until June, because those are dates we know. I believe there's only 2 weekends without a UFC event.
I'm gonna cry. That's half the year, Jason. It's half the freaking year.
By the way, did you see the hell of a fight that apparently is taking place?
Does it involve Justin Gaethje?
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Oh God. Gaethje, I don't care when that fight is. That fight could be 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm up for Edson Barboza, Justin Gaethje.
That fight is freaking MMA heaven.
We talk about it. The fights that tell you, no matter what you're doing, you got to be in front of your television set or in front of your computer. Gaethje Barboza is a fight you can't watch on DVR. You got to watch that thing live.
Absolutely. We're looking at the whole UFC roster. What two guys would you want to match up with? Gaethje Barboza.
That should be
the
fight night in Philadelphia main event. That screams Philadelphia.
Oh my God, yes.
Like I saw initially, it was reported that it was going to be Nashville. And I saw Ali Abdelaziz, who's Justin Gaethje's manager, say, yeah, not true. And then I saw a tweet late last night. Brett Okamoto was mentioning Philly. I'm like, that's got to be in Philly. Has to be in Philly.
Absolutely, man. That would be a phenomenal main event in Philadelphia.
Oh, man. I'm surprised, honestly, they don't put that fight on pay-per-view. Because people would pay to see that fight.
Absolutely. I mean, both these guys have built reputations of being some of the most exciting guys in the UFC. And I could certainly see that as a main event on TV. But he put it on pay-per-view. You know, they're not drawing cards.
That'd be a rock-solid co-main event.
Yeah, that really would. Those guys aren't drawing cards alone, but together, I would fork over some money to watch that one.
Now, but look, I do feel like you could get, if that fight was not the main event of a card, I could see where you could get to the third round and you're going, oh, damn, I wish this was 5 rounds.
That too. I mean, you don't want to go 15 minutes and leave something on the table. You want to get the whole experience with this one.
Both of them, how much they love leg kicks.
Yeah.
That's just straight fun. That is a fight you invite your friends over for.
Yeah. That's a fight where you're proud you're an MMA fan because it's happening.
That's where, you know, you come to the Floyd house. We got some steaks on the grill. You know, we got some cocktails going. That'd be a fun night.
Damn right. And the Galvan household will have ordered 100 buffalo wings.
I did see. Did I see your Instagram picture of your napkin? And you basically said you can tell which one was mine.
Yeah, mine was disgusting. Yeah. I'm a messy person. Just a messy human being.
But that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, you can check out a new episode every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com. Also, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Really appreciate those 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Google Play. And of course, coming up next week, we're going to preview Bellator 214. I will have interviews with Ricky Bandejas, Aaron Pico, and Juan Archuleta. So I really do appreciate you taking time to listen to the podcast. And also be sure to like everything we do on YouTube as well. We got plenty of content up there as well. So this has been the MMA Report podcast, which here every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I cannot overemphasize enough the importance of the bye week. We talk about it all the time. But, you know, we don't break it down enough and explain it. It doesn't always bear out that the team with the byes always win. It doesn't. But in a lot of cases, it does. And just because you have the bye doesn't guarantee you anything other than the best chance you have to advance. And if you look at it, common sense, first of all, you want to get one of the top two seeds because you don't play in the first round. Guess what? You get a win automatically. It's a win. You're already advanced. You don't have to play. Then you get time to rest and heal. Oh, but Chris, you get rusty. Let me tell you something. You can knock off the rust pretty easy. If you're rusty, you just haven't practiced the right way. Let me tell you what's important. Most important is to get healthy.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.